Happy Taco Tuesday.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I remember that scene, Cyrus, Always Be Closing. ABC, Always Be Closing. They're having a sales contest. And he says, first prize, Cadillac Eldorado. Second prize, a set of steak knives. Third prize, you're fired. It's one of the best lines in movie history, if you ask me.
It is a fantastic movie. Would it make it onto your list of movies that you would recommend?
Well, you know, no, because I can't recommend it because of the bad language. I mean, there's nothing else in it that's objectionable, but the bad language is enough. So, no, I would say that's sort of a private
movie. Yeah, it's next level bad language.
It is bad language.
It's constant.
And, you know, it's not blasphemous toward God. It's just very vulgar language otherwise, but brilliantly acted. That's the darn thing about it, is that it's so brilliantly acted. And breakout characters. I mean, you got Al Pacino and Kevin Spacey. I'll put an asterisk next to him. And Jack Lemmon.
Is it Ed Harris in that?
Ed Harris.
Yeah, fantastic cast.
Alan Arkin. Who am I leaving out? Alec Baldwin. It's just like virtuoso performances. And yet it's not a movie I can recommend. I like it a lot, but I can't recommend it. Isn't that a shame?
That is a shame. Isn't it when it's something's like art and they're representing a particular type of person and situation, do you give a pass to the bad language because it's honest?
Well, I mean, this is a thorny question here because I'm personally adamantly opposed to using bad language and I don't use it. And I'm not saying, hey, look at me or anything like that. But what I mean is that to me, I find it very off-putting. Not everybody finds it that way. I do. But in this particular case, for some strange reason, this movie, because the story is so powerful, it's a moral tale. And because the acting is so well done, I mean, head and shoulders above virtually anything else out there. And I'm fascinated by the pathos of these desperate salesmen who are desperately trying to keep the lights turned on and keep food, you know, on the kitchen table, that I find value in it. I'll put it that way. And in my case, I screen out, I block out the bad language. So it is a compromise. That's for sure. It is a compromise, but it's one that I feel comfortable with because I see the value outweighs the stuff you have to wade through. So that's my take on it. Yeah. Notice we haven't even mentioned the name of the movie.
I was wondering if you were going to mention the name.
I don't think I will. But just remember, in life, first prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. Second prize, set of steak knives. Third prize, you're fired. That's the kind of sales conditions these guys were living under. All right, 888-914-9149. How about Elliot now in Silicon Valley, California? Hello, Elliot. Good to hear from you again.
Oh, hello, Patrick, the big kahuna. Oh, I'm sorry. I think I might have said the name of the movie.
Oh, you came. Actually, you didn't, so we're safe. We're good.
Oh, okay, good. I'm glad. I don't want to upset anyone. I was just wondering, two questions. First, if you could choose any superpower you want, I mean, like anything. What superpower would you choose? And the second question is, how would you use that superpower? How would you employ it?
That reminds me of the question, like, if you could have three wishes that would be granted to you, what would they be? My first wish would be to have 1,000 more wishes that would be
granted. You know that's against the rules, Patrick.
So you say. I don't see the rules written down anywhere. It reminds me of that. I don't know. I mean, it would be fun to think about superpowers of flying or mind reading or things like that. But an honest answer, if you will accept holiness as a superpower, that would be my desire, would be to become truly holy. And how would I use it? I would use it to try to serve other people and help other people. I know that may sound trite to you. I don't know. But honestly, that's what I would choose. I'd rather be holy than be able to read minds, or be holy rather than be able to fly or catch things on fire, as interesting as that would be. But that's my honest answer. What do you think, Elliot? Is that silly?
No, I think that's a very good answer. It's not the one that I would choose, though.
Mm-hmm. What would you choose? That's interesting.
Well, I would choose the ability to cure cancer or paralysis or Parkinson's with a touch. In other words, if I saw a Parkinson's sufferer or a cancer patient, mm-hmm. and I could cure them with a touch, mm-hmm. then that's the superpower I would choose. But here's the thing. I wouldn't put any conditions on the person I cured. They could right. be a wonderful person. They could be a terrible person. They could be a Muslim. They could be a Hindu. They could be an atheist, agnostic, Christian. None of that would matter to me. Mm-hmm. All that would matter is that I would have that ability to cure them and make their lives better. Even if it was a person in prison on death row, I'd cure them. And mm-hmm. that's all I'd basically do with the rest of my life.
You'd be in high demand, Elliot. And of course, I meant the curing thing. Yeah, that of course I meant like I would want to cure people. I'm just joking. I think that's a noble desire. Would that there were more people who had that. There were some Catholic saints who had that ability. Some of the apostles could do that. St. Peter, St. Paul. Jesus, of course, as you know, could heal people, raise them from the dead. That's pretty amazing.
That is pretty amazing. I don't think there's anything more amazing than that. If there is, I don't know what it would be.
I agree. Could you imagine, Elliot, picture yourself 2,000 years ago in the land of Israel watching Jesus go from town to town. Let's imagine that you were like just one of his followers. You were just watching and listening and seeing what he was doing. And you see people who are crippled or blind or in some other way had illnesses to be cured, and every so often someone who is dead would be raised to life. Wouldn't that be like beyond anything you could imagine to see this happen?
I find that an amazing question, to imagine myself in that situation. And that kind of leads me into another question I'd like to ask you, but I know that you have other people waiting in the queue.
No, that's fine. No, just you and me right now, Elliot. That's take all the time you need.
Okay. Here's another thing I often think about. If I lived in biblical times, if I lived 2,000 years ago in Palestine, mm-hmm. and then through some miracle, I was brought into the present day, 2024, in Silicon Valley, California, what would my reaction be? What would I think of the things that I would see? Because if I saw a smartphone, or if I saw a tablet computer, or if I saw something like that, mm-hmm. would I think that it was magic, or would I think that it was simply something that was produced by scientists and engineers?
Which didn't even exist. In a very rudimentary way, I suppose there were scientists and engineers who could build pyramids, but nothing like, yeah, I mean, such things were utterly not even thought of, like tablets or computers or anything. That's a fascinating question. I can imagine you would be dumbfounded. Like, what is this?
I think they would. And there's something else that I'd like to say. If you and I went into a poorest section of San Francisco, poorest mm-hmm. section of Oakland, whatever, even in the worst sections, year-round, there are convenience stores that are opened up 24 hours a day selling chocolate ice cream. Mm-hmm. And even a poor person is able to go into one of those stores and buy chocolate ice cream. I mean, the poorest of the poor, unless they're absolutely starving, in the absolute worst sections of town. And the infrastructure and the ingenuity so that you could have fresh fruit in winter, mm-hmm. chocolate ice cream in summer.
Ice in your soda pop or in your, you know, just to be able to have ice. Unheard of for all of human history. People didn't have ice readily available. They didn't have, obviously, air conditioning. I mean, I marvel at the things that we enjoy. Is that what you're driving at? Did the utter amazing array of things we enjoy today that all of human history never even knew about, much less enjoyed, and we do. I find that's really amazing.
Yeah. Well, thank you for taking my call. I really enjoyed talking with you this morning.
Thank you, Elliot. I hope that means that you've enjoyed talking to me other mornings. Haha, just kidding.
Oh, yeah. I do. We'll talk again.
All right. Sounds good. I always enjoy Elliot's phone calls. 888-914-9149. How about now, Emily in Chicago? Good morning, Emily.
Sorry, hold on. Hi, Patrick. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome. Welcome aboard.
And I just want to say thank you first because I called before about discerning my fifth and sixth baby, and the fifth is in the car and the sixth is in my belly. So thank you so much for your help.
Wonderful. I think you discerned
really
correctly. Praise God.
I think so, too. So my question is just a follow-up on the rom-com debate that someone emailed in about, and you had some conversations about it. I am actually a writer, and I've been trying to, I had a literary agent. I've been trying to break into traditional publishing for about a year. I've written a young adult rom-com. There's nothing blasphemous in it. There's nothing spicy. There's some kissing, but nothing crazy. And so you've got this in my head now. I'm thinking the ultimate goal with this is to help bring in an extra set of revenue for my family and to pursue what I think is one of the gifts that God gave me, which is writing. But how much should I be thinking about this? Like, I want to make sure that there's nothing inherently wrong or immoral in what I'm doing and in what I'm putting out, of course, because that would deter me completely.
Yeah. So if I can, I'm going to try to fill in a few blanks. Tell me if I'm right. So you're a busy mom, five children, one on the way. So six children.
Right.
And
six,
your husband, I'm guessing, is employed full time and you'd like to make some extra money for the family budget.
Yep. That's right.
Okay. Well, I love that idea. And thankfully we live in a time now where you can do work from home and produce, product like writing product and things like that without having to go into an office. So I would encourage you. I think it's wonderful, especially it would help to, what's the right word? Not unleash, but it would help for you to be able to have that creative outlet since God has given you a talent for writing.
Yeah.
And that's always a good thing. So what I would suggest would be go for it. Give it a try. Write a draft. Shop it around.
I have one, actually. So I have one. Now I'm trying to figure out do I go forward with it, because it sounded kind of like what really freaked me out was when you were speaking about the saint who saw a premonition of her own place in hell being connected to these romantic books. And I thought, oh, my gosh, is this a sign? Am I supposed to be listening to this as a sign to put this away? And, that was kind of where I was going.
I can understand why. So that was St. Teresa of Avila, and she relates about how her mother was addicted to romance novels and things. I think, though, that this is her situation was different because it was frivolous. It was idle time, not well spent. I think she had a sense that God was calling her to other things. And so I don't get the impression that what you're describing falls into that category, personally.
Yeah. Okay.
But
that was kind of my point in wondering, because when you spoke this yesterday, you said, does it serve to the other one? Does it serve an ultimate, or does it serve the greater good or goal, is what you asked yourself.
Does this serve my goal? Whatever my goal is, does this thing help or hurt, or is it indifferent to it?
Right. And I hope in this case but of course I get concerned about, I try really hard to keep my ego in check and things like that. I'm not looking to be famous. I don't want a bunch of accolades. I just want to use this gift to hopefully, and ultimately maybe write some Catholic books as well. That's kind of my dream, but
I think it's
maybe
great.
Maybe get a foothold in the industry first and then see what I can do with that.
Let me give you a hot tip. Okay. And he doesn't know he's probably not even listening to us talk right now, but I would encourage you, just for the heck of it, why not? Get in touch with our Peter Atkinson. He is the maestro, the producer of The Merry Beggars and all the different productions that are really high quality productions heard only here on Relevant Radio. Have you ever heard any of those?
I've heard some of them. I've heard some. Okay. And so I think
he's got
great.
The Night Train. He's got the Christmas Carol, the stories of the saints. So they're all professionally acted. He has professional voice actors come in and all the Foley artists who do the sound and the music. Yeah, exactly. It's just really, really top notch, as good as anything else out there in the world of secular production. But he's here at Relevant Radio, and maybe if you send him an email, if you went to relevantradio.com and under listen, you'll see the show, The Merry Beggars, and you can get in touch with him and just say, hey, you know, Patrick and I were talking, and I'm a writer, and, you know, he's sort of making connections here, and he suggests that I just touch base with you in case there might be some, you know, who knows, maybe there is some possibility there. And if nothing else, he's very well connected in the industry. He seems to know a lot of high level people, so it wouldn't hurt to get to know him.
That's a great idea. Thanks. I'll do that.
Okay. Yeah. So Peter Atkinson.
Okay.
The Merry Beggars is his, I wouldn't call it a show. It's just a massive extravaganza of wonderful programming. The kids love it. Have your kids heard any of his Merry Beggar stuff?
No, but that's a great idea, too. I should definitely get them plugged into that.
I bet they'd love it. I can hear some of them in the background.
I bet they would. Yeah, they're very concerned about the cookie, I promise. So
no
I won't take up any more of your time, but I really appreciate this advice. It really puts me at ease, so thank you so much.
I'm glad, Emily. Call anytime. I'm so delighted that your decision about the children is what it is. So that's great. And yeah, I mean, tell Peter that I suggested it, and we'll see what comes of it. Thank you. Why don't we take a break? This would be the perfect time to do that. Cyrus, are we going to start producing movies at Relevant Radio at some point?
Let's do it.
Is it a yes? Okay. Thumbs up from Thumbs Cyrus. Up. That's got to mean something. I'll be right back.
Yeah, maybe.
Big time gratitude to Charity Mobile for sponsoring the Patrick Madrid Show. They're a pro-life cell phone company with nationwide coverage and no contracts. You can choose from the latest phones or bring your own. New customers can mention Patrick for a free phone or another offer. Info at charitymobile.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. Hey, I have an email I want to share. Cyrus, I know you've got a few stacked up as well. This one comes in. Let's see. This one comes in from Joseph. And Joseph is listening in Minneapolis. Thanks for the email, Joseph. So he's following up on comments that I made. And I've made these comments many a time on these airwaves about how much I'm adamantly opposed to giving children, even adolescent children, teenagers. I mean, 18, that's different. 17, that's kind of different. But below that, I don't recommend giving kids smartphones. So here's what Joseph said in response to a conversation on that topic as of last week, I believe it was. He says, I'm a longtime listener. I truly appreciate your program countering the darkness with truth. However, I feel I need to let you know of an important matter. I've been looking for a new extra phone for our children to share, and this is to share use of when needed. I'm a longtime Charity Mobile customer. And I called them to find out, a dumb phone that does not have access to the internet. They do not carry any. Every dumb phone option from Charity Mobile lacks the ability to lock out access on the internet using a browser, whether through cellular data or Wi-Fi. I could explain the numerous and simple ways to do this, even if their data restricted plan, but I don't want to make the email longer. I've heard you mention from time to time about the dangers of smartphones, and I fully agree. I, too, have been under the impression that dumb phones are the way to go. However, that is no longer the case. It's as if the phone manufacturers want the internet available on every phone. Charity Mobile mentioned that there are limited options to get a truly dumb phone that work on their network, but they don't really offer them, and I didn't have time to research further. I personally found that Apple has a way to lock down an iPhone to the point of making it, in essence, a dumb phone, using the screen time option, and that is true. I'm familiar with that as well. He says, my point is that when you recommend getting a dumb phone, it might make people think that if they get a somewhat dumb phone, and he's describing like a flip phone that Charity Mobile has, that they will be safe, but they won't be. As I previously mentioned, there are some options out there. I would highly recommend that Charity Mobile put together a cheat sheet on how to lock down an iPhone. This is a viable option, maybe the most viable option, other than getting a true dumb phone elsewhere on their network. God bless you, a brother in Christ. Well, thank you for that. I do appreciate it. And naturally, of course, we love Charity Mobile. We support them. I'm seeing their praises all the time. And I'm a member of Charity Mobile. Cyrus, you are too. So we've got nothing but wonderful good things to say about them, because they are a good company, a Catholic company. They donate 5% of the income from your bill to pro-life causes or and other Catholic causes. So it's a good thing all the way around. But I hear you, and I have had this similar conversation with the good people at Charity Mobile, and they've explained the same thing to me, that these phones, the flip phones, they are dumber than the smartphones, but they're not dumb phones in the true sense or the strict sense, because you can get out on the internet if you know what you're doing. And kids are smart, and they can figure it out. So what I would propose are basically two things. I encourage parents like yourself to be proactive, do everything you can to keep the bad stuff out of your children's hands and minds with smartphones. So one thing I think would be marvelous, and who knows, maybe it'll happen, I don't know, but there is an organization, there is a company called the Light Phone, L-I-G-H-T, and this, they're a manufacturer of the phone. So it's not, they're not like Charity Mobile. They're not a competitor of Charity Mobile. They don't compete with them in the marketplace for like people to sign up and become members. But you can do that. But the main thing that they provide is a truly dumb phone. This thing is monochrome. It is little. It doesn't have apps on it. Let me just read to you just a little bit about it. The Light Phone is a premium minimal phone. It will never have social media, clickbait news, email, internet browsers, or any other anxiety-inducing infinite feed. It's a phone. It calls and texts. There is a customizable menu of simple tools and a dashboard website to manage everything. There's a headphone jack, Bluetooth, can be used as a personal hotspot. And that's it. You have the phone function. You have an alarm. You have a calculator. And you can text. And that's it. You can't go on the internet. You can't access news or websites. There's no TikTok, none of that stuff here. So the reason I mention this, I have no connection with these people. You know, I would like to see, I think it would be wonderful if maybe Charity Mobile, you know, could include this or something like this in their product offerings, because we love Charity Mobile. We want everybody to sign up with Charity Mobile. They're a good company. And wouldn't it be great if something like this could be integrated into the product line? That's, for all I know, it's possible. I don't know. But we have people who are in conversation on that topic, and I'll have to wait and see what comes from it. But if in the meantime, if you're like exasperated with no options and you really want to get something that your kids can make use of that won't be dangerous, take a look at this. It's another possibility. And again, it's called the Light Phone, and their website is thelight.com. All right. And everybody, go get your plan changed to Charity Mobile, right? Why give money to a company that's going to just feed into dark things like the porn and abortion and things like that? Part of your money that you spend on your phone bill goes to things like that at some little point down the road. So Charity Mobile is the exact opposite of that. Catholic, pro-life, they support the pro-life causes and other Catholic causes. We have some people who have switched over to Charity Mobile, and it's charitymobile.com, by the way. and they have that 5% spiff that comes off the top of each monthly bill that goes directly to Relevant Radio. It's a great way to say thank you to Relevant Radio, which is awesome. So check that out. Let's go to John now in Chicago. Good morning, John.
Yeah, two quick questions, real quick. Number one, if Adam and Eve had not messed up in the Garden of Eden, would we all have gone to heaven or be assured of heaven? And number two, I heard this on Relevant Radio some time ago, and I tuned in late, so I didn't catch the full gist of the conversation. Mm-hmm. But somebody, and it wasn't a caller, somebody had said that there was reason to believe that the rich young man that came up to Jesus and said, "What must I do to be saved?" And Jesus said, "You must drop everything and follow me," or "give up everything and follow me." And the young man walked away dejectedly. This person said that there is reason to believe, and I didn't catch what the reasons were, that he may have been one of the four main writers of the New Testament, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They think it might have been Mark. So what would have been the cause for that? And again, for the first question, would we all have been okay if Adam and Eve had not done the wrong
thing? Right. Good, two good questions. Let me take them in reverse order. So we can only speculate on who the rich young man was. And speculation is interesting, but we can't know with certitude who that rich young man was, the rich young ruler, as he's also referred to. We just don't know. So he's used he's portrayed in this encounter with Jesus as a would-be follower who's willing, but not all the way, to follow Jesus. When Jesus says to sell everything you own and then come follow me, give it to the poor and then come follow me, that's something up with which he can't put, because we're told that he goes away sad, that he can't or is not ready yet to follow Jesus. Does that mean that maybe at some point later he decided to follow Jesus? Entirely possible. Does that mean that he ended his days filled with regrets that he never followed Jesus? I think that too is entirely possible. So it's an intriguing possibility that maybe it was Mark, the author of his gospel. We just don't know. So all I can say is it's an interesting theory. It's possible, but we just have no way of knowing for sure. So does that answer that question?
Pretty much, yeah. I guess, you know, maybe one of the apostles, Mark, had more money than some of the others, or one of the evangelists had more money than some of the others. Maybe that's it.
Could be. Yeah. I personally don't put a lot of weight on that theory, because it's just, I mean, I think if there were anything to it, there would have been some inkling in the church fathers early on. And to my knowledge, at least, they don't equate the rich young man with Mark, at least not that I've ever run across. So let's take a look at your first question now. What would have happened, again, theoretically, but what would have happened if Adam and Eve hadn't sinned, if Adam hadn't given in to his wife's beguilement and eaten of the apple, the forbidden fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil?
Yeah.
I'll go with St. Thomas Aquinas on this one. What he says, John, is that if that had happened and Adam had passed the test, then there would have been no original sin. And so all of the offspring of Adam and Eve would have received those preternatural and supernatural gifts that were lost by the fall. So we would not be conceived in a fallen human nature. We would have the integration of our intellect and our will. We would have mastery over our lower appetites. We would have infused knowledge. We would be immune from sickness and death even. And yet there still would have been the choice for each individual human to undergo. In other words, we wouldn't all be like angels, just sort of flitting around endlessly happy, but we would at least have a leg up on the human race as it is now, in that there would be no fallen human nature. We would be born with an intact, elevated, grace-filled human nature, and then each person himself would either pass or fail the test and either fall or remain in the state of grace. That's how St. Thomas answers it, and it seems to make a lot of sense to me.
All right. Fair enough. Okay.
All right.
All righty. Okay, then. Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. Good to talk. Let's go to Anthony now in Germantown, Wisconsin. Hi, Anthony.
Afternoon, gentlemen. Quick question. I've gotten into reading the Bible for the first time, start to finish, and just as reading it and listening to podcasts, I'm curious on what version of the Bible is best to actually study it, line by line, verse by verse, and every translation tends to it can change a word here and there, and it can change the whole meaning of something. So getting like a concordance to the Bible, I'm basically looking for an avenue to get clarity, because there are books that have been redacted but are still referenced that you can read, but those are many of the Gnostic texts, but they give more perspective to things. So basically, how do I start? How do I not get basically overwhelmed? Because people spend their whole lives creating a career out of studying Old Testament things, but even the version of the Bible, King James, it's referenced older versions like the Septuagint. There's translations that have been missed or misinterpreted. So how do we go about navigating biblical studies and getting clarification and truly finding truth in it?
Okay, great. Well, I'll tell you what I think the answer to that is. In fact, I'm certain that this is the right answer for the average person who's not intending to become a scholar. If you're intending to become a scholar, we can circle back to that in a minute. But if you just want to answer this question for your private devotional reading, your prayers, you know, basic study at a non-scholarly level, I would recommend one of the newer translations, either the Revised Standard Version Catholic Edition. It's published by Ignatius Press in this country. It's called, also known as the Ignatius Bible. It's a faithful, accurate, good translation. No translation is perfect. I mean, there will always be things that you could say, well, we could have translated a little bit better this way or that way. But on the whole, I would say the Revised Standard Version Catholic Edition is an excellent and trustworthy resource. It has minimal footnotes, but it does have footnotes. And in a case where there might be some question or even a dispute about whether to include a certain verse, for example, there will be some of those that are explained along the way, which is good. The version that most Catholics, really all Catholics in this country, are familiar with is not that version. It's the New American Bible, which is also, it's pretty good as far as it goes. I mean, it has a few clunky ways of translating some things and, you know, maybe a bit paraphrastic in some cases, but it's also a serviceable translation. What I don't like about the New American Bible, which is the version that you hear at Mass on Sunday or any day of the week for that matter, because it's the translation that is used by the U.S. bishops and other English language bishops. I think Canada uses it as well. But in any case, it's what you will be most familiar with. You will hear the language in that version at Mass, and that has a certain value to it. But I object to some of the footnotes and the explanatory notes, which are, they come from the area of higher criticism in biblical studies that follows what I refer to, and others too have referred to it as, a hermeneutic of suspicion, which seeks to quote-unquote demystify or debunk things that traditionally Catholics have always understood, the fathers of the church taught, etc. Things like that Jesus actually did multiply loaves and fish. Now, I don't remember specifically if that's one of the problem areas, but in that world of higher criticism, there are those who say Jesus didn't really multiply loaves and fish. That wasn't a miracle. It didn't really happen. The real miracle, they say, was that the people shared their food with each other. Now, I tackled this topic a month or so ago on the air. If you're interested in my commentary, you could find it on the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. But that was a real miracle, and Jesus really did multiply loaves and fish to feed many thousands of people. It really did happen. Another one that comes to mind is in the introductory notes for the Gospel of Matthew. It says, well, we all know that Matthew didn't really write this gospel, even though, you know, that's the traditional understanding, but no way Matthew wrote this gospel. And we don't really know who wrote the gospel, so we're just going to call it Matthew for the sake of convenience. These kinds of things are problematic, as is the footnote for 1 Corinthians chapter 3, beginning in verse 10, where St. Paul describes a man who is suffering the loss of the burning away or the purification of his bad works in this life. Wood, hay, and straw, they're described as, and they burn off in this time of purification. He says, St. Paul says that the man suffers loss as this takes place. He's not in heaven yet, but he will go to heaven as though passing through fire. And the note there says, this isn't referring to purgatory. Things like that are injurious to a, I would argue, a proper and faithfully traditional understanding of the Bible. So I'm not a fan of the New American Bible's notes. I'm okay with it as a Bible translation as far as it goes. I would recommend the New American, I'm sorry, the Revised Standard Version Catholic Edition. Now, another one that is similar to that, and it's maybe a little bit newer than that, than the Revised Standard Version, is known as the Augustine Bible. And that is another fresh translation from several decades ago, but with the finest scholarship, using the best available manuscripts and manuscript science. So those two are quite good. If you wanted to go with something a bit more archaic, the Douay-Rheims version that's commonly available, and there are different versions, the Challoner version and other ones. But the Douay-Rheims is also a very faithful English language translation. It's not perfect, but it's good. I would also recommend, Anthony, that you get a good and faithful and traditional Bible study and commentary. Scott Hahn has got a lot of these at his website, scotthahn.com. I'm a big fan of Don Bernard Orchard's A Catholic Commentary on Holy Scripture. That's a large hardcover, big, big volume, but it's very well done, very, very good and faithful. So if you can get some of those commentaries, that's going to make all the difference. It'll also get into the newer ones anyway. We'll get into some of these scribal glosses and some of the verses that are not present in some versions for various reasons, and they'll tell you why on those as well. I've got to take a break, though, Anthony. I hope that's helpful to you, and I appreciate your phone call. This Taco Tuesday, plenty more ahead right after this. Big time gratitude to Charity Mobile for sponsoring the Patrick Madrid Show. They're a pro-life cell phone company with nationwide coverage and no contracts. You can choose from the latest phones or bring your own. New customers can mention Patrick for a free phone or another offer. Info at charitymobile.com.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
This is appropriate music, Cyrus. And you know that all the homeschooling moms with the kids clustered around the kitchen table are waiting. They're looking at their clock and their watches. They're just waiting, Cyrus. They're waiting on you. Don't let them down.
It's coming. It's coming.
Don't let them down. Patience. I agree. It's a virtue, I hear. Let's go to Steve in Noblesville, Indiana. I know that town. Hello, Steve. Welcome.
Hello, Patrick. Love your show.
Thank you.
The Israeli flag has a star on it. What does that represent?
Well, it's known as, I mean, I'm not an expert on this, but it's known as the Star of David. And my understanding is that it's a symbol that is associated with not only King David, but with the Jewish state. And even before the Jewish state, which only came into existence in 1948, that it was a sign that was associated with Judaism in a way similar to how the cross is associated with Christianity. But how far back that goes, I don't really know.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I was just curious.
Well, you know what you and I could do, Steve, is in your spare time, just fire up Google and look it up. I'm sure you'll find any number of things that we'll talk more about. I just, off the top of my head, I don't know. I know it's associated as a symbol that represents Israel and Judaism before that. But I'd have to do a bit of Googling. So maybe that'll help. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate the call. Let's go now to Christine in Northbridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Christine.
Hello. My question is, people are always talking about what the Pope said about, you know, the same-sex man, Pope Francis apostasy. Now, I had texted her back and said, bless the sinner, not the sin. Is that just a good synopsis of what he said or no?
Well, this is a document referred to as Fiducia Supplicans. That's the Latin name for this. And when it first came out, I offered an extended commentary on the question that seemed to be on everybody's mind, which was, does this mean that the church is going to like allow blessing gay marriage or anything like that. So the long and the short of it is, Christine, if you were to read the document, it's an odd document, if you ask me, because on the one hand, it goes through in the beginning a painstaking and accurate rendition of the church's teaching on sexual ethics within marriage and the nature of marriage and how marriage is between one man and one woman, and that the church is irrevocably opposed to and will not accept, this is what fiducia supplicans stipulates, any notion of so-called gay marriage, two men or two women, or any other odd combination. So it does present accurately all of the church's teaching on this issue, but then it says that it's okay for a priest to bless couples in irregular situations, irregular unions, I believe is the term, and or same-sex couples. So the reason I say that this is an odd document and it has caused a great deal of confusion and polarization is because, well, a couple things. First of all, the same Vatican office, which used to be known until just recently as the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, it issued a response to the same question about 2 years ago, maybe by now 3 years ago. I believe it was in 2021, if I'm not mistaken. So it's the same question, can priests give blessings to same-sex couples? And the answer was a resounding no. So the same office now issued a reverse course saying, yes, you can. But it was very muddled. And it didn't comport with what was said in the earlier document from the same office. Now, granted, there was a different prefect or head of that department in 2021 than there is now. The cardinal who's in charge of that office now, he's perhaps best known for writing a book about, it was called Heal Me With Your Kiss. So it's a kind of a theology of kissing. And I'll just leave that there. Seems very odd to me. But so his perspective on this issue seems quite a bit different from the prior occupant in his role in that Vatican dicastery. The second issue is because even though, to be fair, the document is meticulous in explaining accurately and clearly the church's teaching on sexual ethics and the nature of marriage, it then creates a problem because people say, okay, yeah, but what does it mean to bless a same-sex couple? And I remember watching the antics of some of the Catholics, left-wing Catholics on Twitter and elsewhere, who were just tripping over themselves, doing somersaults and gyrations, trying to explain away this clear problem, and that is a couple in an irregular situation, as the document refers to, they're in an irregular situation because they're living in a sexually unlawful way. They're living together, or they're divorced and remarried, or there's some other sexually unlawful situation. That's what makes them a couple in an irregular situation or in an irregular relationship. It's kind of euphemistic to refer to it that way, but that's how it's referred to. So the nature of the very group of people that this document is addressing in this section is people who are living together in a sexually unlawful way, and it includes specifically of same-sex couples. So then the question arises, well, what does this mean exactly? So if the priest can give a blessing to a same-sex couple, does that mean that he's blessing what they're doing? And naturally, there are people who won't have the nuanced theological background to bring to this. So they won't maybe have even read the document, and they see priests blessing same-sex couples. What do you think they're going to think? Obviously, they're going to assume and think and be scandalized by this idea that the church is sanctioning something that the early part of the document specifically says the church does not sanction. So it creates confusion. And it's like, yes, but in the minds of people who see this. The other thing, too, is that, as you said, the church has always said that priests have the right and even perhaps the duty to give blessings to anyone who comes to them. If a priest were, you know, walking through, I mean, if Hitler had been arrested, let's say, let's pick somebody spectacularly wicked like Hitler. And let's say he had been captured and he didn't commit suicide and he was in prison and he asked for a Catholic priest, he asked for a blessing. The priest could bless Hitler. He's not blessing what Hitler did, but he's blessing him as a sacramental in a way that would hopefully order order his mind and his will to repent of his sins and to receive sanctifying grace through the sacraments. But yeah, the priest can bless drug addicts and embezzlers. The priest can bless adulterers. The priest can bless anybody. Anybody is an apt candidate for a blessing. And we've always known that. And we certainly didn't need a document to say that because it's common knowledge. But what creates the issue here is, why specify same-sex couples when, A, we've already known that priests can bless, you know, a gay man comes up and says, Father, would you please give me a blessing? Yes, I'm not blessing what you do. I'm not blessing your sin. I can't. But you, as a wayward child of God, you have a right to receive a blessing as much as anyone else does. So I don't want to over-elaborate here, but I will say that that has been the net result of this instruction or this declaration, because even though it is very precise in saying the church does not teach these, the church does not teach that, this is what the church teaches, then by saying the priest can give the blessing to same-sex couples, it now, I think, inevitably creates a question mark. Well, what does this really mean? What if you can bless an individual gay man or a lesbian woman or an adulterous heterosexual man or an adulterous heterosexual woman or a drug addict or whatever, which you've always been able to do, why does it go out of its way to say you can bless same-sex couples? What is the reason for that? What is that blessing? What is it blessing? And as I say, it does indeed give the appearance to most people that it's a sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge, tacit approval, which it's not, but it comes across as though it's a tacit approval of same-sex activity. And that's been the net result of it. And by the way, most of the bishops, most of the countries and most of the bishops in terms of population in Africa publicly announced, we're not doing that. None of our priests are going to be giving blessings to same-sex couples. And that's part of the document too. It sort of hedges its bet by saying, you know, if the priest deems that this would cause scandal or misunderstanding, he does not have to give these blessings, even if somebody asks him for it. And they were even saying things that there was a follow-up document, like an instruction or an explanation saying, and it can't last more than X number of seconds, and it, this blessing can't be done in any way that might suggest an approval of some sexual union of these people, et cetera, et cetera. So the bishops of Africa and many other countries besides have come forward and say, we're not doing that. Not happening here. So as I say, this, for whatever reason, it was really promulgated, and I don't know. I know what the document says, so we'll take that on face value. But the net result has been division, fracturing, disunity, confusion, and ongoing controversy, notwithstanding the antics and the gyrations and the, you know, the contortions that some on the left are going through to try to make that, there's nothing to see here. Everything's fine. Just move on. So it's that's where things seem to be right now. And we'll see what happens in the future. But I guess maybe I might even have over-answered your question. But does that help a little bit, Christine?
No, I'm glad because I can play this for them. But when I say, I'm trying to make it just short, and I just say, I see it as bless the sinner, not the sin.
Yeah, I understand. Well, I don't think I could say anything more than what I just said in terms of the time that's available, but hopefully that's helpful. Thanks, Christine. How about Patty now in Los Angeles? Good morning, Patty.
Hi, good morning. So my question is this. The Catholic Church is universal, correct? And
yes.
So I see in my area, I see St. Peter's Italian Catholic Church and St. Mary Queen of Martyrs Armenian Catholic Church. And I'm just wondering, why that is. I mean, do they follow the Roman? Are they considered Roman Catholic churches?
Well, yes and no. So there is no such thing as really the Roman Catholic Church. That's a term that was cooked up by the Anglicans, of all people, during the time of King Henry VIII. I mean, you might have been able to see it here or there, but it was never a title. It really isn't a title of the Catholic Church. It's just the Catholic Church. And it was a way on the part of the Protestants to try to pigeonhole the Catholic Church as being just one option of the so-called ancient Catholic Church. And the Protestants at the time that I'm talking about, going back to the Protestant Reformation in England, they used it as a term to kind of knock the Catholic Church down into just one quote-unquote denomination and one strain or type of the so-called bigger Catholic Church. So there's more to say on this topic, Patty, so if you don't mind holding, I'll come to you on the other side of the timeout. If you can't hold, that's okay, but I'll offer a few additional thoughts on this issue. What about these churches? Armenian church, Polish church, Italian church? I'll talk about that too.